Bombas makes the most comfortable socks, underwear, and T-shirts.
Warning, Bombas are so absurdly comfortable you may throw out all your other clothes.
Sorry, do we legally have to say that?
No, this is just how I talk, and I really love my Bombas.
They do feel that good, and they do good, too. One item purchased equals one item donated.
To feel good and do good, go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery at checkout.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
You got mail.
Hi, I'm Lily Tamaris.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Elise and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this pod, we break down the week in internet discourse, weekly viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can literally do anything else with your time.
Anything else. And if you like what you hear today and you want to hear more, we've got a Go Touch Grass Patreon up and running with tons more content weekly. You can get access to our Discord community. You can listen to our spinoff series, Search History, where we break down a viral discourse from the past. There is one up right now about the James Charles Tati Westbrook beauty influencer feud.
Yes.
That was conducted entirely via 40-minute long YouTube videos that I had to watch on 2x speed all in one day. So please, please, please go listen to that. You can buy it individually or subscribe to the Patreon at $5 or $10 level, and you'll be able to hear it.
And our episode was 90 minutes long.
It was long.
90 minutes of YouTube drama. Lord help us.
Yeah, 120 minutes of raw influencer footage to camera drama cut down to a 90-minute explanation, I think is not that bad.
There you go. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love your reviews. We need more of them. But the best review you can do is to tell your friends. Tell your friends. Tag us in a little story. We're always online.
Yeah.
We love the love. We love you. We love all the positive stuff.
Yeah, we love the positive stuff.
Let's be very clear. The negative comments, well, like we say, negative comments. Well, positive comments, I'll tell you. Positive comments will always get our names spelled incorrectly.
Yes.
The negative ones, they do the work to spell our names right.
Yeah.
Positive ones will always have Millie, I.E., Elise with an E.
Yeah, Elise. It's a lot of Alice. So we will take this time to remind you, it's M-I-L-L-Y for Millie, A-L-I-S-E for Elise. We think you can get it. We think we love you guys so much. We think you can get it.
New year, baby. Because it's new year. It's year of the snake.
Year of the snake. And speaking of the new year.
Yes.
2025 is the year of Go Touch Grass on YouTube.
Yes.
Every week, every Saturday, we have full video episodes up on YouTube. Even if you listen to the audio, the YouTube is like the director's cut. It's the extended version. You're getting extras. You're seeing the behind the scenes.
You're seeing the fits.
You're seeing the fits. And there are great fits in studio today.
I also want to let you know, bitch, when I say every Saturday, because it wasn't one rendering before I left my house to go out on Friday. And guess who came back from the bar with Elise to come back and upload that shit at 2:30 in the morning? Moi.
Yeah.
So
M-I-L-L-Y.
Yes.
Millie.
Not with an I-E. I don't work at a diner. I'm not above it. I just don't.
You're not like a really cute little dog.
I'm not a cute little dog with a Republican owner. My name is not. I'm sorry. We know the correlation. Anyway, speaking of Republican, I'm kidding. Our guest today is indie rock musician, born in New York, based in Nashville,
Tennessee,
whose debut album, Super Pedestrian, is out March 7th, and she will be touring the whole dang thing on her Back in Town tour. Everybody, welcome to the studio, Annie DeRusso.
Ooh, the crowd's going crazy.
Oh my God. No, y'all, thank you.
See, Tennessee, she said y'all.
I did. That happened quick.
There you go.
It's the best gender neutral way to address everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, is like sometimes people cook with what they've put out into the world.
I like bitches. Listen up, bitches. Is good.
It doesn't roll off my tongue. Y'all is just so easy.
Yeah.
And I'm from New York, and I thought like going there, I wouldn't slip into that. And then like a month in, I was like, it just makes every sentence easier.
Oh, yeah.
Well, y'all. Are y'all going?
I feel like y'all is pretty like not universal.
It's been making big moves, y'all. It's been making in recent years.
Mm-hmm. Annie, I love your music.
Oh my God.
And I would kind of define it as like, I don't want to say sad girl, but definitely in touch with your emotional girl, indie rock, which is so crucial to me, a very emotional woman. So there's something, like I say, it's like a balance of like, new and fresh, like sounds and perspectives, but also like reminiscent of like 90s, like grunge or something.
Thanks. So
like, I'm curious how like the internet has an effect on your songwriting or like your lyrics or even like, yeah, even how you connect with fans, you know?
I mean, I think it completely colors the whole thing because I share my music online. That's where I got a lot of my fans, to be honest, like during COVID on TikTok.
Nice. TikTok. Yeah. You were one of the TikTok booms?
I guess so. I was in the early indie TikTok booms. Not a lot of people are talking about it, but yeah, it was kind of a huge moment.
So what kind of stuff? How did it pop off on TikTok?
I was a little bit hesitant about TikTok, like I think everyone was in 2020.
People are still hesitant now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
people by the U.S. government.
Is a little hesitant, yeah. And I wasn't really even on it. Then I downloaded it and I was like, oh, there's like everyone's on here. And there's, of course, things I'm going to like. I found so many comedians that I really loved. And then I wasn't seeing a ton of indie music. And my friend kind of suggested or encouraged me like, oh, just throw a video up. Even if only 200 people see it, that's 200 new eyes. Because the way the TikTok algorithm works doesn't really show it to people that you know.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Which I love. Yeah.
Yes. It's like the difference between TikTok and other social media is you're kind of... I feel like Instagram is like you're performing for people mostly who follow you and kind of know you already and like already found you somehow.
Yeah.
And TikTok is like you are performing for strangers.
Yeah. Mostly, yeah, you're kind of putting it into the ether. Yeah.
Kind of like busking.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually never thought, but yeah, honestly. Yeah. Except you don't have to like see people's like walk past you, you know?
Yeah. And like spit on you.
And like spit on you or whatever. But yeah, I just threw up a video and of me singing one of my songs and it performed really well. And then I kind of just started posting more. And then by the time that live shows started up again, this is when I was in college. By the time live shows started up again, I was able to like start touring pretty immediately, which was awesome because it really translated to in person and people coming out to the shows, which is kind of the dream at the end of the day.
Yeah. You want people to go to your shows.
Exactly.
That's so interesting because I feel like in comedy, there's so much conversation around like people who are good online, but not good actually in person, or like how much does TikTok translate to shows? Friend of the pod, Jay Jordan, has posted about being like that he doesn't really feel like people come to shows, comedy shows, off of TikTok, unless you're like super duper huge. So it's interesting that maybe for music, people actually do, or there's more of an ecosystem of it. I know I do find new music on TikTok often that I end up going to Spotify and like listening to. So whereas I'm not sure people necessarily, if it's a comedian whose clips they like, they're just like, well, I'll just keep receiving these clips on TikTok.
Yeah. And I feel like people do go, but I feel like it's less of a one-to-one like translation of like somebody who gets big on TikTok but might not be good live. Like I feel like music, like because comedians, you need an audience to get better, to hear the feedback and perform.
Yeah.
Where music, I feel like you can practice and rehearse. I mean, you can tell us wrong, like you can practice and rehearse in isolation and then perform that same thing and like people will still, it will still resonate to people versus like somebody who performs something for a video, it might not translate to like being good live. I don't know. What do you think?
So I kind of disagree. Oh, okay. So let me start. I actually disagree.
You're
no,
allowed.
I'm just kidding.
You're
I,
so allowed.
I am allowed.
This is a safe space.
Oh my God, that's interesting. Before this, they did tell me not to disagree with them at all.
Yeah, well.
So
it's our platform, so.
But I hope that was okay.
No, it's not.
I agree in some ways. I do think that there's some artists that can like really hone in on their live playing in an isolated way. But I do feel like there's kind of a very similar problem that's been seen in the music industry, I guess, in the last few years, where something will blow up on TikTok and then it really is bad live, or the person's never toured before,
yeah,
or they've never played with a band and stuff like that, or they really can't sing live, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of songs will blow up on TikTok, and even if the person's not singing them, if the song just blows up, like there are people who aren't performers, and I think major labels are kind of just catching on to the fact that like maybe it's not just signing people off of data, you know, maybe we need real artists, which I think is cool. I mean, I think I'll be the first to say so much cool music came on TikTok, you know. I mean people have a lot to say about it, but I found so much music on there.
Yeah, I find tons of music on TikTok.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't think it's like, yeah, I think it's a really cool space. And I feel lucky that it worked for me, but I do know it does create kind of a really interesting way the music industry has worked the last few years.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a balance. Like there are plenty of comedians that are really great online and also really great performers.
Yeah, sure.
So
okay, and speaking of, yeah. I feel like this leads us right to our next question, which is that you have gone on tour with former guest, friend of the pod, Caleb Herron. How did you meld performing music and comedy together? What were the similarities, differences? Like, what are some interesting observations of doing like a show like that together?
It was one of the best tours I've ever been on.
Awesome.
The way it kind of happened was we had met at South By a few years ago, and then he messaged me on Instagram October 2023. He was putting on like a show at the Bell House here, and yeah, exactly. Yes,
yeah,
that's how we met. Yeah, yeah. So you're kind of actually there. Yeah,
yeah, I was there from the top.
Yeah. So this all comes back. But basically, he asked me to special guest. I was like, "Oh, that's interesting. I actually just got back from New York. I was living in Nashville at the time, but that's so fun. I'd love to do that at some point." And then he was like, "Well, it's actually the youngest you'll ever be, so I think you should get on a flight right now." And it worked on me instantly.
Yeah, got your ass.
And then I flew up to New York and he didn't announce the special guest for the show. And I was like, I'm playing alone. I usually play with the band. No one's even going to know my music, whatever. And then I got up there and I realized there was like a pretty big crossover for our audiences.
Yeah, there are a lot of people knew your music.
Yeah, and it was so random because like it wasn't announced or anything.
Yeah.
And it was sold out. And so then when I got off stage, Caleb was like, "We need to go on tour together." And I was like, "We need to go on tour together." And then the next day we went out to lunch and sent like an email out to our teams. And I think people were a little bit hesitant. Like our teams were like, "I don't know. I don't think a lot of people had done that in the indie space before."
Yeah.
Like maybe like huge artists like John Mayer and Dave Chappelle. Am I making that up? They did something together.
Well, that sounds like a collab.
Doesn't that sound like that would happen? Dave Chappelle has done a lot of like, he did something with the Fugees. He does a lot of music stuff, Dave Chappelle.
Okay. David Chappelle.
David Chappelle, sorry. David Chappelle has done
quite a lot. And there's a lot of like comedians that also do music too. So it's not
It is like spaces that
like,
mix.
It's not, it hasn't been any, and definitely not so much like the gays and you know what I mean, the girlies and gays.
Well, that's I think what was like the main thing for us is like, okay, our audiences really do cross over. You know, like the only difference is like maybe some of his audience at the time was a little bit older and mine a little bit younger, but the demographic crossover was pretty intense. And we were like, okay, we want to create nights that aren't just a concert or a comedy show. Like, we want them to be a full evening.
Yeah.
So we hosted the evening. We had a drag queen open every city. Then a local comic, like just one of Caleb's friends. They were all phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then Caleb would do a set. And then me and my band would just close out with a set. And then we would end the night with a dance party, actually.
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
It was like just a whole night. It was one of the best things I've ever done. Don't get me wrong, I love music and I love going to like a classic indie rock show. But it can be a really long night, especially if there's like two or three bands on the bill that you don't know their music and it's loud and you're trying to critically listen.
Yeah.
It's very emotional. There was something about the show that was like, oh, interestingly, it's okay to have fun.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. Sure. I was like, wait, it's actually nice to have fun.
For sure.
Everyone here is just having fun. Like no one's like, it's not tearing your heart out. It was just, every night felt so joyful and it was really, really great to perform for people who had just seen comedy. Yeah, I've never done that before. Everyone was in such a great mood and so receptive. So I would do that a million times over. It was like my favorite tour I've ever been on.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah, I know. That sounds amazing.
That's beautiful. That's so awesome. Can't wait till Go Touch Grass.
And
exactly.
The Go Touch Grass Paris tour.
No, but that's really great to hear. You know, like, I think that it's just cool to see, like, out of the box and stuff. And then, like, so much of, like, comedy, touring, like, I don't know, people, like, love the suffering of it and like, oh yeah, it's hard nights, but it's like, no, this can be fun and we can enjoy it and do something different and step outside the box. So
yeah,
that's always like really cool.
It was really, really fun. Also getting to hang out with Caleb the whole time.
Yeah.
Caleb was a beautiful thing. Yeah. Also, I know you're saying like the suffering of comedy touring. I will say, after talking to Caleb, comedy touring seems a lot easier than music touring.
I mean, I'm sure it is in the sense of like, there's a lot, you just personally have to show up and the show can
go
but on.
And you can just show up at like the minute it starts.
Yeah, exactly.
That is crazy to me. Like when me and Caleb were discussing the tour, I was kind of like, yeah, he's like, so what time do you usually get to the venue? Say the show's at 8, 2 p.m.
Yeah, sound check.
We're there at 2 p.m. We're building the stage. The band is there. We're sound checking.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. You don't have to do that.
Caleb has his whole day in the city. He's like walking around. He's lounging at the hotel. He'll like stop in, eat lunch with us, and he'll leave, you know, like, and we're just there. And then he can just get there literally when the show starts.
Yeah.
I'll say that, you know, that's also like male, like a woman on tour, like, you gotta get in makeup. You gotta, I mean,
oh, that's true. Me, yeah, like, yeah, of course.
At least, like, there's a contingency of like female comedians where it's like, you gotta show a look, like, you know.
Oh my God, yeah.
So, you know how it is. So,
I know how it is, yeah.
So, you're not just showing, you're not just rolling in, but yeah.
But as far as technical prep, you do just kind of show up and go, like, this thing on?
Yeah.
Tap the
but
mic.
You'd be surprised. I've gone to shows
where it's not on, and you're like, what the fuck?
No. Well, people like, have, I've done like comedy shows where I'm the stand up and it's like a theater thing or like it's music and it's like, they don't know to have like a single mic for. There's little stuff.
Yeah. There's like a huge technical. Yes.
And also, there's some programming stuff where it's like, yeah, we don't want something depressing to. That's what Caleb told me. Like my, like his advice was always like, if you do music and comedy, always do comedy first. Because if you do music first, like, not even music, but like I was in this show once and there's like a crazy poetry reading that was super like sad and dramatic and all this shit. It was like a girl, like, you know, an Asian American girl who like wrote a poem to her white ex-boyfriend and it was like crazy. Like, and then I had to go.
Oh God.
Who's watched Bridgerton?
Yeah. I'm like, hey, my nipples are huge. Those are two of my jokes. Well, so happy to hear like that fun, joyful story that lifted our hearts. Cause now we're gonna get into some toxic mess.
Okay, and I'm ready.
Yeah, I think it's toxic mess through and through.
Through and through. Wow, it's toxicity of our city. I'm sorry. That's a System of a Down reference.
For the music show.
For the music people. Software update. This is our segment of the show where we update on a previous segment that we've done. Just to give our listeners, like, kind of where is it now? Mm-hmm. And the software update for this week is that Justin Baldoni has released a whole website to defend himself against Blake Lively's sexual harassment allegations. TMZ reports that Justin Baldoni released this website, which includes links to his amended complaint against Lively and her husband, Ryan Reynolds, plus a timeline of all the events that are relevant to the case, Baldoni's attorney, Brian Friedman, reportedly said that the website will chronically trace the facts from the start of the case, beginning to end, starting from Justin Baldoni acquiring the rights to the film It Starts With Us. Not even It Ends With Us. From the, It Starts With Us. It features Baldoni and Lively's emails and text messages. Baldoni's reason for sharing the site is reportedly to refute Lively's claims and make the legal documents accessible to fans. Earlier this month, Baldoni filed a $400 million lawsuit against Lively and Reynolds. The countersuit charges include civil extortion, defamation, and false light invasion of privacy. You can check out the website at thelawsuit.info.
The lawsuit?
The lawsuit?
It's called The Lawsuit.
That is truly bold to be like, you know which lawsuit. The lawsuit.info.
Why is he loving this?
But also, it's kind of like, it's hard to say the lawsuit because there is 8 lawsuits happening at once.
Right.
He's suing New York Times. She's suing him at Wayfair. He's suing her.
She just motion for him to drop his lawsuit too?
She motioned for a gag order that didn't want the website to be released. Obviously, that didn't work. So this is where I called it. Me and Elise were talking about this the other night. I'm saying that the lawsuit, the It Ends With Us controversy, is the 2024/2025 version of the slap. And that we're never going to stop hearing about it for, like, we're going to hear about it for, like, 5 years.
You think so?
The slap? I think that this is worse than the slap, I would say.
I feel like the slap, obviously.
Which is Will Smith slapping Chris Rock at the Oscars.
Oh, that slap.
The slap. Thelawsuit.info.
I was thinking of a website called The Slap. Is that, like, something from Victorious or something? I was like,
I think there might be a movie called The Slap.
Oh, there's, like, there's that movie. It was like a limited series where a guy slapped a kid. Like a kid was being an asshole at a family barbecue.
And the guy slaps
the kid and the whole family like structure crumbles because everyone's like, why'd you slap the kid? How dare you slap the kid? You're a grown man. Why'd you like all that stuff? And it's called The Slap.
Oh, okay. I don't think that's an
artist. No, but The Slap in internet parlance.
Oh, I like that. Okay, The Slap. Yeah.
Yeah. But the slap is the Will Smith.
Is Will Smith, of course.
Yeah. Yep. So
I feel like Will Smith, obviously Will Smith slapping Chris Rock was a bigger, like, explosive moment in the moment because it happened on live TV and everyone.
At the Oscars, I like the most prestigious award.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I watched it in real time and I remember being like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. I was on vacation in Mexico famously.
Because it was also
that's where you were during the slap.
I was in Tulum. Yeah. I was in Tulum drinking. Tecate Light.
Couldn't be further away from the energy of the slap.
Everyone knows where they are during the slap.
I was watching the slap.
Where were you during the slap?
In my living room, observing it go down and
where
wondering.
Where were you during the slap?
I want to say I was also just in my living room watching the slap.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Just observing the slap for what it was. But I feel like with thelawsuit.info, which is what I'm going to call the entire thing from now on. I feel like with thelawsuit.info, because of the dot info, because there's continual releases of information, it keeps reigniting the conversation in a different way.
So you feel like it's like the girl, like girls, like the TV show where like every 6 months people are talking about
the discourse is getting re-brought together. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what I feel like it's analogous to, but I do feel that what's interesting about this is that it's constantly volleying back and forth where it's like, oh, Justin's released this. Well, Blake released a video of this, or Blake released a voice memo of him saying this. And then he's released a video and it's like just a constant stream of new weird information.
Yeah. I'm wondering too, like on Black Twitter, there was a period of time at Twitter at his heyday. Every few months, the same like 3 discourses would happen where it's like people talking about eating ass. Is a date if you don't spend $200?
Okay.
And then if...
okay.
And then, $200 dates. It was so...
$200 minimum date?
Like, yeah, it's not a date if, like, you're not being wined and dined and the guy... Like,
and the number was
$200. Obviously, pre-recession.
Yeah, that's... Now that the recession is on, with inflation and the price of eggs and with the tariffs, it's going to be 25% increase on date
Yeah,
they rice with the terrace.
And then the other thing is like, it was like for women, it's like, if you're in a fire, who do you rescue, your husband or your kid first? And that was, so it was these three.
Wait, what was the, I feel like you people, have to go kid.
Yeah.
Well, no, because the.
Why does my husband need.
But he's your king and he serves you. You can make new kids. I'm saying it's a toxic, like, just like.
I think the people who
I guess this is kind of an age old discourse that has been brought up in many different ways. Because there's always like the.
Serve your man first or serve your kids.
And there's like also the serve your woman first or serve your kids. Because it's like.
There's never a discourse about serving women. It's all about how much you hate women.
And real.
I just need you to know no one's talking about
women. Leave the women. Women's dead. No question.
Don't get saved at all. Yeah. Save, serve, whatever.
I just feel like I'm living in a universe where, because now I'm going to engage in this discourse. If I'm living in a universe where the man is my king and I'm serving him and that's like the vibe of our relationship, what he needs to be bringing to the table is I can save myself in a. That's like how you get to be king.
Well, sure. Like, I'm like, need saving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, well, if this is the dynamic there's that you want.
There's holes in this logic, just like there's holes in the lawsuit.info.
The lawsuit.info.
Okay, wait, here's my take on the slap versus the lawsuit.info.
Okay.
The slap was very succinct. It was just a quick moment in time that everyone could follow.
Yes.
There was context before, too.
There was a little, but it's like the thing was that moment.
Yeah.
I feel like me personally with the lawsuit.info, I'm already so lost in it that I'm kind of like, it's all just noise now.
Yeah.
Can we say that we've had two episodes like 6 months apart or 8 months apart?
Where we've had to discuss the lawsuit.info.
We had to discuss the lawsuit.info and the information, it was completely changed and it's through a journey and it's just all this stuff. Just watch this space on the lawsuit.info.
we'll certainly be talking about it again.
Talking about it again. It's going to come up. People are going to, I don't know if you saw one of our Spotify comments was like really mad that we were not supportive of Blake in the first time we talked about it.
Well, then they should listen to the update.
Yeah, they should listen to the
also, update. They really, I mean, there was like the way that they twisted it on the internet, you know?
Yeah, which is what we talked about in the update.
Which
is
what we talked about in the update.
I would direct them to episode number 2.
And also, like, you're going to get minimum sympathy from me if you have your wedding at a plantation. Just saying. Hot take. If you get married at a slave plantation, I'm going to be skeptical of you.
No, and that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
That's fair.
No, and it makes a lot of sense. Price, yeah.
The price you pay.
The price you pay for getting married at a plantation. Speaking of getting married at a plantation.
Speaking of racist behavior.
Annie, our guest.
We keep doing this to you. Annie is not Republican.
Even though the Nashville allegations are.
Yeah, the Tennessee allegations are real.
No.
Nashville's a blue dot.
She's a blue dot.
She's the blue dot.
Now for the discourse. Our discourse is where we talk about a main topic, the topic that everyone's talking about on the internet. And our topic today is all about the Oscar campaign for the film Emilia Perez.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, heard.
Okay, Andy's booty hole is getting so tight now.
So, Andy, we could just have you read some tweets.
Spanish.
These are in Spanish. Don't worry about what's being said.
Now, for those, this is a podcast for people who don't know what the fuck is happening. So, or maybe you do and you just want to hear us talk about it. Emilia Perez is a 2024 Spanish language French musical crime film written and directed by Jacques Audouard, based on Audouard's opera libretto of the same name, itself based on the 2018 novel Écoute by Boris Razón. The film follows a Mexican cartel leader, Carla Sofia Gascon, who enlists a lawyer, Zoe Saldana, to help her disappear so that she may transition into a woman. Selena Gomez, Adriana Paz, Mark Avenir, and Edgar Ramirez also appear in starring roles.
I'm sorry that you had to read all of that French and before.
I know. Well,
that's
And that's
this isn't resistance. A French podcast.
This isn't a French podcast.
This isn't a French podcast.
And you know, again, someone who's had my heart broken by a Frenchman.
This is not a French podcast.
Wow.
Not
sucking.
I'm
oh,
not,
wow.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's listen. Dark.
I mean, it happens to every black woman.
I didn't know that.
Oh, French guys love black women. It's kind of crazy. Amelia Perez had its world premiere on 18th of May or May 18th, 2024 at the 77th Cannes Film Festival. I will say, you went to Cannes. I went to Cannes. Mm-hmm. Cannes is really beautiful.
Yeah. Not for the film festival.
Not
we were
the
just
film.
There.
We were just there. Beautiful place. It's like South Beach meets Europe. It's fucking sick. Highly recommend. Anyway, okay.
That's just a little plug for Cannes.
Plug for the town
y'all,
of
like, just so y'all know, we have traveled to these places.
Yeah, well, I'm spots. Just saying. You
I
know,
often go to Cannes.
Well, I don't often go to Cannes. I went to Cannes once, and it was cool. Hot take, the South of France, fun. Amelia Perez won the jury prize and the Best Actress Award for its female ensemble. It was theatrically released by Pathé in France on the 21st of August, 2024. And the film received generally great reviews from critics in the U.S. and Europe, earning praise for its direction, music, performances, and themes. But elsewhere, it's pretty controversial on many fronts. Yes. In Mexico, the film was panned by audiences and critics who criticized its cultural representation, songwriting, use of stereotypes, and Spanish dialogue. It all started like the kind of backlash with like Latin American audiences and like Hispanic American audience started when social clips started circulating online of Selena Gomez delivering bizarre sexual lines in stilted Mexican Spanish. Eugenio Derbez, who's a very famous Mexican actor, but he also like has done a bunch of movies in America. I think one of the biggest one is like How to Be a Latin Lover. And the other one is like he made like an Overboard remake with Anna Faris, I think, or something like that. Eugenio Derbez described Selena Gomez's acting as, quote, indefensible.
Damn.
And, you know, he said that her Spanish was pretty fucking awful. And his comments blew up online and he got dragged by Selena Gomez stan. And he had to apologize. And Gomez responded that she tried her best. So before we get into anything else, what do you think about the... Have you seen clips of Selena Gomez's Spanish and performance? And what do you think about it?
I haven't seen clips of her performance specifically. After I heard the discourse about this movie, I went to go look for trailers. Mm-hmm. And I will say, all of the trailers seem to be incredibly misleading.
Yeah.
Not, I couldn't find any of them where there's any singing.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was kind of the thing about it. But I can't really speak to anyone's performances or anything because I haven't seen it.
And
it doesn't need the Selenators coming up.
I low-key do have a lifelong Selena Gomez loyalty as well.
I mean,
huge Wizards of Waverly Place girl.
Wow.
And people are loyal to her.
And, okay. Okay. So you said yes to the hat. I was like freaking out about whether or not to wear this hat before. I also love Selena Gomez in the Scene has some insane hits.
In the Scene?
Like music?
The band. Oh, Selena Gomez in the Scene, A Year Without Rain.
Yeah.
Oh, I like her like pop, like Love You Like a Love Song.
I like Chills. Hands to Myself.
Hands to Myself.
Chills.
Yeah.
She's a great like fun musical person. I'm just
my favorite post about Selena Gomez's performance in the movie is that someone posted a clip and they were like, she speaks Spanish like she's speaking one of like High Valyrian in Game of Thrones, and then I watched it and it really does sound like that.
Me cortó la lana, cerró la llave, no funciona ninguna tarjeta, todas mis cuentas están bloqueadas, me quiere robar a mis hijos.
As someone who doesn't speak fluent Spanish, but like,
at least she's
knows
better
some.
Than she thinks.
My feeling is I think a lot of people were acting like, oh, well, she's allowed to like speak with an accent and stuff like that. It wasn't about the accent, as far as I can tell. It's about a weird, stilted delivery that doesn't actually make sense in Spanish, which I can't actually judge because my Spanish isn't fluent like that. But I believe people when they say that that is what's going on.
As someone who is fluent in Spanish, performs in English and Spanish, like speaks Spanish at home, I would say that the closest I could describe is when Selena Gomez is Spanish, is when in Lilo and Stitch, they were trying to find a planet for Stitch and they said Earth instead of Earth. Like Earth, like that's how all of her Spanish sounds. Like, it's just emphasizing the wrong parts of the word. It sounds weird. She's using Mexican slang and he's dying. It's just, it is. It's like you can't understand what she's saying because there is. And I like to say there's this black woman on 90 Day Fiance who married this, I think he's like Mexican or Central American guy or something. And she's speaking Spanish, but she has a strong American accent, but she's conjugating the verbs properly. And you can understand she just has an accent. That's not what this is. I'm telling you, like instead of saying Canal Street, she says Canal Street, you know, which I say because I'm a fucking idiot. But, you know, like it's just emphasizing the wrong things. I thought that the backlash with Eugenio Debrez is like was really like I feel like that was a fair criticism of like if you're going to be in this movie that's going to be in Cannes and all this shit, take the time to, you know, get a fucking language tutor and all that shit.
Also, you are allowed to say that you thought someone wasn't good in a movie. I feel like right now the state of criticism is that everything is perceived as mean to do or say. But part of putting out art, and you can speak to this too, is that like, yeah, people might say they don't like it or that they didn't think it was good. And it's not actually mean to say, I don't think this was a good performance in a movie.
She's like, I gave it my best with the time constraints. And it's like, well, maybe we needed more time for...
Or be like, I'm sorry, I don't speak enough Spanish to do this in a month or whatever. But it is funny to like be bad in a movie and be like, I did my best. Sorry. In the comments.
Well, so that's one controversy.
I'm going to start replying to our Spotify comments that anytime someone's mad, I'll be like, I did my best.
I did that once. Sorry. When someone was like, why isn't your audio synced to your video? And I'm like, we work really hard.
There is one time, yes, you did respond to that like, person and you were like, you need to give us a break. You need to understand what we've been doing.
And the guy was like, okay.
Yeah, he responded. And he was like, oh, cool.
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
I mean, why would you comment on podcast? Like, I just wouldn't. Anyway, but we love all our friends.
And we love everyone. And you should comment. You should comment.
Oh, my God.
It's M-I-L-L-Y and A-L-I-S-E. Oh,
gosh. Okay, so activists have also questioned the film's trans representation, noting its use of trans identity as, quote, inherently redemptive tool for its criminal protagonist. I mean, we're going to, let's put a pin in inherently redemptive trans identity. So GLAAD, an LGBTQ plus advocacy organization, described the film as a profoundly retrograde portrayal of a trans woman and a step backward for trans representation. Put a pin in that. And they say that because basically this guy's like a monster cartel boss and then transitions to a woman and is like supposed to be like kind of the message of the film, or not the message, but like the film is like kind of leading to like they are now absolved of all the shit that they did because they're trans, you know? And the aspect of the film that sparked the most outrage in Mexico is the frivolity with which it treats the issues of violence and the disappeared. Gabby Meza, a film critic, told the BCC that it had...
BBC.
BBC, sorry.
BCC is the Brooklyn Comedy Collective. I don't think that...
It's Broward Community College, actually, where I grew up. And, sorry.
Either way, that's not...
I was just thinking Big Black Cock, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Told the BBC that it had been perceived in Mexico as, quote, exploiting a tragedy to generate an entertainment product. Trans femicide, which is like the genocide of trans women, becomes a crime in a watershed moment for Mexico City. There are roughly 30,000 homicides a year in Mexico, and more than 100,000 people are missing. So people are saying, like, this is a very serious crime. You're just making it into an entertaining thing. What the fuck? Like, just because you use, like, a hot trans woman doesn't mean, like, it's erasing all this stuff. And then when they asked the director, the French guy, he says, I didn't study Mexico much. What I needed to know, I already knew a little bit.
Oh, my God.
And then, quote, there's another quote, that Emilia Perez wins the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Film in the midst of a human rights crisis for trans women in Mexico, trans femicides, drug trafficking, thousands of disappearances and victims is not visibility, wrote Natalia Lane, a transgender activist in Mexico. Hot off its success at the Golden Globes, Emilia Perez, this is quoting from December, because it just, the Golden Globes were in December. Emilia Perez is a favorite for the Oscars next month, where it has been put forward as France's entry for Best International Feature Film. In any case, Mexicans will be thrilled to know that the director has already teased a prequel. Which okay. We don't know if that's okay. happening anymore.
Yeah, I think that that might be on pause, that project.
Anything about that before we get into the real big chunk of it?
I mean, I haven't actually seen the movie. I keep stopping and starting it, but it's incredibly boring so far. Like, I'm doing an Oscars watch party, so I'm like, okay, I need to watch all these movies, but I've been struggling with Emilia Perez.
Yeah, I have to watch Emilia Perez.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me that a French guy's off-the-dome impressions of Mexico that he did no research about turned out to be, like, not accurate and also harmful. So.
And there you go. Annie?
I don't know. I can't say that much because I haven't seen it. But but it sounds, yeah, I mean, what you read sounds pretty damning. I'll say that much.
Okay, well, there we go. Let's keep going. Then the Mexicans began observing that Emilia Perez was a film about Mexico where just one main actor was Mexican, made by a French director who speaks no Spanish, shot in France, scripted with unnatural sounding dialogue and heavy with stereotypes. Comments online were by turns amused and annoyed, but also baffled that the film was being garlanded at International Film Awards. Somebody from X wrote this. Emilia Perez makes history as the first winner of Best Motion Picture, non-English language written with Google Translate. Carla Sofia Gascon, the Spanish Spanish as in from Spain, transgender woman who plays Emilia Perez, shot back on X saying the, quote, unjustified hate was coming from, quote, a few people with their own interests, quote, it's a pity that they use so many profiles to, parentheses, uselessly attack a film with such a beautiful message and representation instead of using them to support Mexican films and creators. It's a pity that they don't use these same bots and paid attacks to demand just and a fairer society in the world. Mexicans responded to the idea that it represented their country with ridicule. One account quipped that Gascon must be, quote, the first winner of a Golden Globe to have half of Mexico blocked on Twitter. Well, so that's the Golden Globes, right? And that's so some people are pissed. They're like, there was no Mexican people involved. Carla shoots back. Then on January 30th, 2025.
Oh, recent.
Yep.
Oh, recent, baby.
You'll be saying, oh, recent again during this recent story.
Journalist Sarah Hagi tweeted this tweet, which now has 4 million views. It's so insane that Carla Sofia Gascon still has these tweets up. Straight up have never seen tweets this racist from someone actively campaigning to win an Academy Award. There are more than a dozen. And what are the tweets? Well, baby, we're going to read
them. What are the
them.
Tweets?
What are the tweets? I'm going to have Elise read this one because she made me read the one about Brian Johnson's 19-year-old son's erection. Actually, read the next two. So,
okay, I will say that.
Don't say the R word. Yet.
Yeah, I'm going to avoid. I'm going to avoid the R word, which I do see is in here. So,
yeah. You can say the R word.
This one is connected to a racist cartoon of what appears to be a Muslim man crying, saying, "Mama, he hurt my feelings." This is translated from Spanish. New attack in France: beheadings in Nice by one of these R word followers of Allah. It is nice to know how to say our word followers of Allah in Spanish. I won't be using it, but that is a vocabulary that I didn't have before. How many times will we have to expel these madmen from Europe? Cool. Until we realize their religion is incompatible with Western values, we do not learn. Thank you, Erdogan, the authoritarian leader of Turkey. Cool. Here's another one. Islam is becoming a hotbed of infection for humanity that urgently needs to be cured. Cool. This was in that one was in 2016. The one before didn't have a date on it. I'm just going to make note of them as we have them. Once again, how many times in history will we have to expel the Moors from Spain? That's a fucking insane thing to say.
The Moors, Spanish Inquisition.
She's going back to 1492. We're going back to Ferdinand and Isabella type racism. We have not yet realized what this threat from civilization means, which constantly attacks the freedom and coherence of the individual. It's not about racism. It's about Islam. That one's from 2021.
Yeah.
That one's from 2021.
That's tough.
Wow. Recent. She shared a picture of a random woman who's wearing like the full burqa. I'm not sure the actual designation, but like her face is covered. Okay. That's the bottom line. Islam is wonderful without any kind of sexism. Women are respected. And when they are respected a lot, they leave a little square on their face so that their eyes and mouth can be seen, but only if they behave well, although they dress for pleasure. What a deep, disgusting humanity. So it's like that classic thing where people, they act like, oh, I'm about. It's about feminism. Mm-hmm. It's actually about feminism. This one is from 2020. There are more or less between Muslims and Christians some 4.7 billion believers in the world. Einstein's, Galileo's, Da Vinci's, Socrates, Plato's, Asimov's, Hawking's, just one. Mass does not define validity, intelligence, or knowledge. It only defines quantity. I don't even really know what she's saying.
She's saying that, like, even though there's a lot of people that follow Islam, like,
It doesn't matter.
It's like quality over quantity.
Okay, that one's from 2022. That is from 2020 as well. Sorry, not 2022. It just goes on and on. Sorry, is it just my impression or are there more Muslims in Spain? Every time I go to pick up my daughter from school, there are women with their hair covered and their skirts down to their heels. Why would that matter to you? Like, why does that even matter? Maybe next year, instead of English, we'll have to learn Arabic. And a lamb. I don't know. I feel like that last bit probably didn't translate right. Anyway, that one is also from 2020. All of that sucks. And I will say that I did see something online that says if you read them in the original Spanish, they come off as more hateful.
Oh,
like there's
absolutely.
A level of like vitriol that in translation you don't even truly get.
Oh, feeling lucky right now.
Yeah. Awesome.
There's two more that I wanted to read. This one was about George Floyd.
Awesome.
So I really think that very few people ever cared about George Floyd, a drug addict swindler. But his death has served to once again demonstrate that there are people who still consider black people to be monkeys without rights and consider policemen to be assassins. They're all wrong.
Mm. Okay, all lives matter. Yeah, all lives mattered.
Like,
it.
Kind of like,
I think she was trying to be in the, like, she was trying to have, like, a in the middle position and then ended up just being really racist.
Yeah. In a follow-up post, Gascon added, too many things to reflect on regarding the behavior of our species every time an event occurs.
I mean, that I don't. Pretty... Too many things to reflect on regarding the behavior of our species
every time an event occurs.
That I can't disagree with.
Yeah. Perhaps it is no longer a question of racism, but of social classes that feel threatened by each other. Maybe that's the only real difference. Sure.
Okay.
Gascon, who was the first openly trans actress to be nominated for an Academy Award, has also weighed in on the Oscars ceremony from 2021.
This is my favorite one of the tweets.
From 2021, the first held following the COVID pandemic in which Nomadland won Best Picture. This is what she tweeted. More and more, the hashtag Oscars are looking like a ceremony for independent and protest films. I didn't know if I was watching an Afro-Korean festival, a Black Lives Matter demonstration, or the 8M. Apart from that, it was an ugly, ugly gala.
Apart from that, it was an ugly, ugly gala is what I like.
Was that the year of the slap?
No, because the slap was 2022.
Damn, I wish it was all the year of the slap. We could all pull back together.
If it was the year of the slap, the tweets would have been crazy.
Yeah, sure. I'm surprised we actually don't have any.
Can we get her commentary on
the
slap?
Yeah, can someone bring her up and ask her what she thought about the slap?
She's busy, guys.
She's got a lot of people trying to get in touch.
So, thoughts?
I mean, she's really racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a lot to say.
She's obsessed with Muslim people.
I'm not loving what she's saying.
Yeah. Cool.
She also said a bunch of like racist stuff about Chinese people after
she
COVID,
said, like, yeah,
like anti-vax stuff.
If you were to put in AI what's like a right-wing Republican Fox News person's point of view about America? Or like, what are they? They're going to say trans rights. They're going to say DEI. There's like keywords that are whatever. What she's doing is the right-wing Spain version of shit. They have this really, really, really like outsized, like the way that we feel about Mexican people in America. I mean, also Spanish people feel that too, because they're the colonizers and there's a whole complicated history about being Latin American versus being Spanish. So, but also like a Spaniard right-wing person, like they really hate Chinese people. They really hate Muslims. They also hate, but like,
Those are like their hot button issues, or like what, like the effects of Islam on our society, or like whatever. Those are like their hot button feelings.
And I heard that from Elite was like a Spanish like Gossip Girl show that I watch. And in like one of the seasons, there's like, they got like three poor kids from the hood to come into their really nice posh like private school, and there's a Muslim girl, and like Spain and France specifically really likes to be like separation of church and state, so like you can't wear your hijab in school. Make this girl take her hijab off, but she has beautiful hair and it's like a sexy what the fuck is wrong with these people?
God,
but like that's like a thing, you know? So
yeah
I mean, it's crazy that no one, well, or that they knew about this and still hired her.
Yeah.
They didn't know.
I just think it's so wild that it got to the point where a journalist found this, because to me, it's like, once your movie is getting to the place where it's nominated for Academy Awards and stuff, you would you would think people are doing a sweep of everyone's tweets. And then also for me, if I'm her, I'm like, huh, I've really used my Twitter to tweet about a lot of hot button issues. Maybe I'm personally going to shut my shit down. Like, if I'm getting...
She doesn't think it was wrong.
Yeah, you know? she stands behind it, I guess.
That's just is always so strange to me to be like, it's not even that I think she needs to think it's wrong. It's like to not realize that, oh, I've commented on a lot of hot button things, and now that I'm really famous, I might want to shut my shit down.
Yeah.
People shut their shit down just when they get a big, like, when they get SNL or whatever, even though they don't even have anything, just to like shut it all down, because you know that people are going to be going through your shit.
I had a friend who like ran for local superintendent or something in a school district that's like very small. And there's like pictures of us in college on Facebook, like, you know, one of those like 100 photo album, whatever, where we're like drinking in college. And she's like, can you untag me? Like,
That's like, the thing is, people shut their whole shit down for less.
I mean, I guess it is though, like, okay, better for everyone else that she didn't, in terms of understanding the context.
Yeah, it just always surprises me.
But it is such a strange choice.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of strange choices, let's talk about the backlash. People are asking for the Oscars to revoke her nomination.
What is she nominated for?
Best Actress. So she was the first.
Oh, wow.
She's the first ever trans person to ever be... trans woman to be nominated for Best Actress.
Yeah. Wow.
So, making history. So Carla wrote a first apology, and I'm curious to hear what you guys think. The apology says, I want to acknowledge the conversation around my past social media posts that have caused hurt. As someone in a marginalized community, I know this suffering all too well, and I'm deeply sorry to those I've caused pain. All my life, I have fought for a better world. I believe light will always triumph over darkness.
It's tough because she's addressing, like, it sounds like she's addressing, like, one or two people. Like, she is addressing, like, so many
groups,
millions
yeah.
of people with the amount of different communities she touched with those tweets. It's like, who aren't you addressing?
You know, again, especially, she said terrible things about Muslims, but also terrible things about the Oscars. So it's going to be really hard.
She also called Selena Gomez a rich rat.
Well, we're getting
There's
to the
another
rich
one.
Oh, I think maybe I saw some of that.
We're getting to the rich rat discourse. It looks like it's going to be pretty hard for her to keep continuing to promote this, because her co-stars are, you know, no one's going to want to promote shit with her. Zoe Saldana, my fellow Dominican, addresses her. This is the funniest headline I've ever read. Zoe Saldana addresses her Emilia Perez co-star's controversial tweets, quote, It makes me really sad because I don't support it. Mm. Like, okay.
I mean, she's got to be so fucking pissed because she's up for best supporting, right?
Yeah, and like...
And I think...
There's not a lot of like Latina, Afro-Latina women that...
She's the only one also who I haven't heard anything bad about. Like, I mean, I hear bad things about the movie generally, but like it seems like people actually think she did a pretty good job and like
yeah,
maybe could win.
Spanish, which is like... Very rare to see like an Afro-Latino person, like, you know, as an Afro-Latino person myself, like, usually it's really hard to get cast as Latino in America. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. Like, this is going to like tank. It could potentially tank the campaign for every other award, just hers. And so I am like, if I was Zoe Saldana, I'd be so fucking pissed.
Yes. Other people, you know, are saying that the person who found the tweets was a studio plant. Put in to promote other Oscar films over Emilia. And because of that, Variety issued an interview with Sarah Hagi, who is a journalist, but also is Muslim Canadian. And first, you know, Sarah shared that she wasn't paying attention to Carla until she saw a tweet that used the word, quote, Islamist, which Sarah says was a clear dog whistle to like, there's some weird shit going on. And what she found was shocking. So this is a quote. This is like an excerpt from the interview Variety did with Sarah. Variety says, so it was as simple as searching a keyword and everything was just there. Sarah says, it was as simple as searching one keyword. And from there, I followed extra keywords, especially in Spanish, since that's the language she tweets in. I searched things like Islam, Muslims in Spanish and hijab and anything that might bring up relevant results. When I typed in those words, these tweets had barely any engagement. Maybe a couple hundred.
Subtle burn. Yeah, I know. She's also tweeting racist stuff to no response.
Just a couple hundred views, 1 to 2 likes at most. There was zero
racism
traction.
Into the void.
Yes. Even when she initially tweeted them, this wasn't some viral controversy waiting to resurface. She had tweeted these things and they had existed online unchallenged from 2016 to 2023. There was no pushback, no visibility. This was just what she was casually tweeting. It wasn't some deep dive or orchestrated effort. It was all just there. The person from Variety wrote, some argue that digging up old tweets is an example of, quote, cancel culture, looking to, quote, cancel the next person. Sarah says, I entirely disregard those people intellectually on every level. These tweets existed from 2016 to 2023, which I found based on the words I searched. Who knows what else is out there? More tweets have surfaced. She had every opportunity to ensure these wouldn't exist online anymore. Hundreds of thousands of dollars go into an awards campaign. This isn't just one random person who stumbled into the spotlight. This was a calculated effort from a major studio. They should have deleted them if they didn't want people to find these tweets. I just happened to be the one who searched it. It could have been anyone. And yet, with one single word search, I found some of the most jaw-droppingly racist tweets. And, you know, Sarah goes on and says, like, I think that she shouldn't get her nomination revoked because she's making history as like this marginalized person and she's saying toxic shit. What say you guys about that part so far?
I think even if it were a studio plant who had leaked the tweets or something, it's also so weird to like minimize it, even though obviously the Oscars are a huge deal and that's why the discourse is coming up. It's weird to minimize it to be like, and the campaign for the other movies, you know, as the argument, it's like, even if it were a studio plant, it's probably for the better that the tweets were brought up, right? Yeah. Like, I don't really know why it would be a problem either way. It's like, it's not really a smear campaign of any type. It's literally her tweets.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's so, like, it's not like the person made it up, even if it was a studio plant with the worst, most nefarious intentions, because that's actually something Harvey Weinstein used to do during his like movies Oscar campaigns is he would try to like drum up negative controversy about like other, movies or whatever. So some people have been like, that's the Harvey Weinstein playbook. But it's like, yeah, but the tweets were there. They weren't made up. Like, and there were so many of them.
So crazy.
I know.
Oh, you gotta wait to see what Carla says. It's crazy.
Like, there were so many of them. And also, to agree with the original journalist in dismissing intellectually people who are like, this is cancel culture or whatever. It's not like she went back and found a couple things from when like Sofia Gascon was like 17 tweeting or
other
whatever.
People, like Brooke Schofield's a great example of someone who when she was 11 or 12 was tweeting racist things. And like, it's not cool, but it's like,
it's different than this was a max four or five years ago. I mean, it's the 2016, I guess the maximum is like, it's within the last decade.
It was
that
wrong to be racist in 2016. I'll say that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say that. We knew about racism in 2016.
I'll go there with you.
I knew about racism in 2016. Well, I'd heard of it.
Yeah.
I was kind of aware of what was racist to say by that point. And like, again, Carla Sofia Gazan is also like very much an adult woman at the time of tweeting. And now it's just not, it doesn't hold water. It's not the same as, yeah, being like, wow, I found this video that you posted on YouTube when you were 15 where you did an accent that you shouldn't do. Like, that's not what this is. This is tweets you sent 3 years ago that were racist.
Like Spanish conquistador racist.
Yeah, really, really.
Like, we should take smallpox. Like, Jesus Christ.
Talking
like,
about expelling people from Spain, I'm like, what is going on with you?
Yeah, she spelled it out.
Yeah.
She didn't leave much to the imagination with those tweets.
She said, we cooked. When we expelled all of the Muslims from Spain, we cooked with that. Like, what are you talking about?
Are you stupid? Well, let's go off final segment, the backlash to the backlash, which is our favorite part of every controversy, is when there's backlash to the backlash. So Carla addressed the controversy in a tearful, hour-long interview with CNN en Español on Saturday evening. Mm. The Hollywood Reporter has learned that Gascon set up the interview on her own without the involvement of anyone working on the film.
I bet she did.
Which was distributed by Netflix. So this is what Hollywood Reporter wrote. The Spanish actress broke down repeatedly in defending herself against accusations of racism, anti-Semitism, and xenophobia while expressing regret for how her words have been interpreted. She also cast suspicion over the timing of the revelations, implying that they were part of an effort to sabotage her award chances. Gascon is the first openly transgender performer to be nominated for an Oscar in an acting category. When CNN en Español anchor Juan Carlos Arciniegas struggled to interrupt Gascon, whose outpouring appeared at times to be more of a monologue, pressed by Arciniegas about whether she would renounce her Oscar nomination in light of the controversy, Gascon had dismissed the idea. I cannot renounce a nomination because what I've done is a job and what is being valued is my acting work, she told the anchor. I cannot renounce a nomination either because I have not committed a crime, nor have I harmed anyone. I am not a racist, nor am I anything that these people have taken it upon themselves to try to make others believe that I am. Also, Carla has deleted her social media accounts and she said, quote, I'm sorry, but I can no longer allow this campaign of hate and misinformation to affect me and my family. So at their request, I'm closing my account on X.
What misinformation?
Some of the screenshots of tweets circulating online, Gascon said, were merely not taken out of context or misinterpreted, but outright fabricated. This was the case, she said, with one screenshot of a tweet attributed to her calling her Mamelia Perez co-star Selena Gomez a rich rat. Here is the whole quote. They said, of course that's not mine, Gascon told CNN. I have never said anything about my partner. I would never refer to her that way. The actress suggested that the allegedly false tweet was part of a targeted campaign against her. I start thinking about where this comes from. And the rich rat thing is from 2022. There's a...
That's the most recent of them all.
There is a picture of Selena Gomez and Hailey Bieber posing together. And Carla says she's a rich rat who plays the poor bastard whenever she can and will never stop bothering her ex-boyfriend and his wife. And I'm like, kind of cooked there. But for someone to think I have ever insulted a person because of, this is Gascon saying, for someone to think that I have ever insulted a person because of their skin color, I do not allow that to anyone, Gascon added, visibly angry, waving a finger at the camera. In defending herself against accusations of Islamophobia, Gascon, this is the funniest part. I'm sorry. This is the funniest part I've ever read in my life. Gascon explained that through tears, that she had a deep personal relationship with a Muslim woman, quote, who I adore, who I love, and who has taught me so much about respect for people. She specified that she opposed what was radical Islam adding that she was personally affected by the 2004 train bombings in Madrid, which occurred near her home. She said she had gone out of her way to avoid causing harm to anyone or anything. This is my favorite part. Quote, "What have I done in my life? What have I done? I haven't killed a single fly. When I have a spider in my house, I put a little glass on it so as not to kill it and take it out to the street." Gascon implied that the revelations was no accident. They have dedicated themselves to searching to put together all the things that I have said at a time that I had written, most of which are false. Most of them I don't even recognize that I wrote them, Gascon said. And they put them all together. And so it seems that she's a very bad person and we must remove her just so we can do the most damage right in the voting period. Because Oscar voting ends on February 18th. So again, wow. She's saying, one, this is out of context, right? It's being misinterpreted. She only hates radical Islam, not all
yeah,
Islam.
Okay.
Two, she would never hurt anyone. She hasn't hurt anyone. She hasn't committed a crime.
She always takes the spider
she
outside.
She always takes the spider outside. Three, half of these tweets aren't even hers.
I like that the only one that she's fully said, no, I didn't do that, was the Selena Gomez one, which by comparison to the other stuff that she said is probably the one that like morally is not as bad. I don't think it's nice to call Selena Gomez a rich rat, but she said the R word. The fact that she's like, no, that one was me, but this one was fake. The rich rat I never said.
Well, the other ones were misinterpreted. This one, and also four, is that it was actually a targeted campaign to get her to not win the Oscar. Mm-hmm. So if you're like kind of on the side of Carla, or you're like, oh, this could be a misunderstanding, I do want to take this clip, even though it's in Spanish. There's a moment where I'm going to show like a 15-second video from the thing and I'm going to translate it first. But basically she's like, we had to hide in our home in London for 2 days like some. And it was, she was going to say a slur even in the, you know what I mean? Like she's like some filthy. And then she like stopped. She's like, I'm going to stop myself. Right now the poll is up on like, what slur she was gonna use.
2 días encerrados en casa en Londres que nos fuimos como si fuéramos. Me voy a callar. Me voy a callar. Fuimos como si fuéramos.
I mean, the energy of even just that clip is so intense. And it is wild for her to do a full hour-long interview again with clearly no PR person helping her, nothing from the studio.
Is she in like her own house with an AirPod in? Or is she in a...
It seems like she's in her own house doing...
I guess like a video thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I wish she was more in person.
She was really close to the camera. There's a lot that I think was not thought through as far as doing the hour-long
interview. Well, she set it up herself.
Even Tom Sandoval, for his hour-long interview, had his PR crisis manager next to him.
Oh, the 23-year-old?
Yeah, whose name was like Rylan or something. Who just sat there and was like, he's crazy. But he at least had someone. I think she did this just off the dome. She was like, I'm going to do it.
Final thoughts on all of this?
Oh, it's... again, I haven't... Like, there's so many things spinning in my head right now. I haven't seen the movie. So no real comments on the movie yet. Yeah, the stuff that we read was unfortunate. I will say, well, I don't think it was a smear campaign. I don't think it's off base with the state of the world and the country and the vitriol towards trans people right now that there would be a smear campaign against the first trans woman up for a category. And that's really hard. I will say, tweets are tweets. So yeah. That's where I'm like, that sucks. That is a real bummer that this would be like the first trans woman nominated for actress of the year. And she's really racist.
It's like two things, right? On one end, it's like, yeah, is a white, straight, male, cis actor going to get the same scrutiny or whatever? Like, you know, or get the same leeway or doesn't get canceled in the same way? Like, probably not. But that's also like the reality of our world is I think people have this kind of argument with like when a black man gets in trouble, like Bill Cosby or R. Kelly or something. where they're like, oh, well, they're just hating on a black man, or like, look at all the white abusers that get away with it. And it's like, yeah, it's unfair that some people don't face consequences for their actions, but also like, no one should be allowed to like get scot-free, but also like, you have to acknowledge the reality that like, yeah, you're under a bigger lens because you're from this marginalized community. And also, which is kind of the message of the movie, just because you're from a marginalized community does not absolve you from all the terrible, shitty things you've done or like believe in or anything. And it's just not enough. And I think that's something now that we're like at our second level of like representation and stuff, like people say this a lot about like Usha Vance or like even Amy Coney Barrett or whatever. It's like, well, no one's celebrating these groundbreaking women. And it's like, it's not enough just to be a woman of color in a position or a woman doing this. It's like, if you're still for the subjugation of other marginalized people, like no one gives a fuck.
Totally.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, the tweets are real. She's not even saying that all of these tweets are fake. I do think, you know, maybe the initial scrutiny came from someone with bad intentions or nefarious intentions, whatever. But at the end of the day, if those tweets hadn't been there and in an enormous number, it would not be the same deal. And I do think that if a male best, like just a straight up straight white male best actor nominee, someone found this many racist tweets, people would. There would be discourse. People wouldn't be like, oh, well.
Yeah. And also, like, again, if the apologies were like, listen, I've talked to like Muslim activists and I understand why these are wrong. And I've had to learn my history about the, you know, China and like all these, every fucking 50 people that she offended, then we can go from there. But there was no acknowledgement about the people.
I wouldn't even hurt a spider, which is how I think of these people. Yeah, as little tiny spiders.
She won me over with the spider argument. I don't know. I guess that's my take. When she said the spider thing, I thought, yeah, she wouldn't hurt anyone. So
you know what I do think about in terms of this? Because so the Oscars has been doing this new format where for like the best actor and best actress, and I think maybe like best director does it too, for a couple of the big awards, they get past winners who know the current nominees to like introduce them and say something nice.
Yeah.
And the Oscars had already said that they were going to do this format again this year. So I am like, who are they going to get if she stays
Roseanne.
In? But it has to be a past winner.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be a past winner. So it's
Tim
like,
Allen.
Has no, to be a past winner in a past winner. And I don't think Tim Allen has an Oscar of any kind.
I'm just thinking of like Republican races.
I think it's really fucking tough because the way that they've done them in the past is like, it's very personal. It's like, my friend Ariana Grande has been a light in my life. The work that you put into everything I've seen when we did, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? They're going to have to find someone to give
this. Has Deborah Messing, I'm just thinking of problematic.
I don't think Deborah Messing has an Oscar.
Has won an Oscar.
I don't think.
Has Juliana Margulies won an Oscar?
Maybe Juliana Margulies may have won.
She's won Emmys,
I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of Oscar winners, but I do think it puts someone in an enormously bad position. And like, there's no way Sofia Gascon is stepping down willingly. That's not
happening. You think she's going to go to the ceremony?
I mean, I don't know. Like, people who are tweeting that they got to teach Arabic in schools, like, they don't have any kind of shame.
Yeah, I don't think it.
Kanye went to the fucking Grammys last night.
And he wasn't even invited.
Wife.
Yeah. He wasn't even invited.
He wasn't even invited.
He got escorted out. I mean, speaking of the Grammys, that could move us to our next topic, unless you...
So we'll vote. We'll vote. We'll have a poll. Is Carla going to show up to the Oscars? Because we try to do a poll after on Spotify every week.
I think unless they ban her, she's going.
When is the Oscars?
I think in March.
March 9th, maybe.
Yeah.
It's enough time for some stuff to shift in terms of it being
She's not going to win for sure.
She definitely won't win, but I'm like, maybe she won't go. By the time March 9th rolls around.
I think maybe worse stuff would have to come out. If it stays at just these tweets, which is crazy to think about.
We're about to be in a trade war with Canada. Like, I don't know if this is going to keep... If she just, like, keeps a low pro for the next month, she could...
Okay, she can resurface.
She can resurface. Yeah. But I also see... I mean, I wouldn't go. But
I think unless
I wouldn't tweet 50,000.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said a bunch of that stuff. So.
Yeah, most of it I wouldn't have said. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Great. Well, now you have Annie's.
I wouldn't show up if I were her. I also wouldn't tweet any of it.
Okay. Well, thanks for clarifying.
The thing that's crazy to me is the only thing I'd seen about this was the rich rat.
Oh, wow.
And doesn't that speak so much to like the world? It's like, why is the thing that broke?
That's your algorithm.
I know. It broke through to me is the Selena Gomez rich rat discourse.
Well, it's because you're running Selena Gomez updates.
You said I'm loyal to Selena Gomez and your algorithm knows. They were like, Selena has been slandered. There's Selena slander out in the world.
You've taken a break from reposting Benny Blanco fan cam videos on TikTok.
Yes.
To come up for air and see that.
And see what's happening with Selena.
Okay, speaking of stans, that brings us to our final segment of the day, Grasshole of the Week. Annie, this is our segment where we declare the person, people who need to log off the most. They must go touch grass. They need to do it expeditiously.
Mm-hmm.
Today's grasshole. It might honestly just be one person, but other people are implicated because they participated.
Mm-hmm.
It is Gracie Abrams stans. Okay.
Have you heard this?
Yeah, with the Dora Jar stuff.
Yes, we're talking about the Dora Jar stuff. First, I'm just going to give quick background to anyone listening. Well, first of all, last night were the Grammys. Miss Gracie Abrams was there, did not win, but was up for Best New Artist.
And she looked stunning.
And she did look very good. I did really like her outfit. She's a pretty girl.
She's a pretty skinny rich girl. I mean, the odds are in her favor to look good.
That's true. And that's true.
Let's get into it. Gracie Abrams is a 25-year-old singer-songwriter who released her debut album, Good Riddance, in 2023. She performed as an opening act at the Eras Tour and was nominated for Best New Artist last night. We're recording the day after the Grammys. So last night, she was nominated for Best New Artist. She also had a song with Taylor Swift that was up for Best Pop Duo, but she didn't win. Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars won. Anyway, her dad is J.J. Abrams, who is J.J. Abrams, the famous director. Her song, That's So True, was like very viral on TikTok. People were doing lip syncs to it. For those listening, it's the one that's like, what you do to get you off? Like, oh my God.
Made it out alive. What I think I lost.
Yeah, that's also a part.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's a different one. No, is it the same song?
You know what? The thing is, I haven't engaged in the Gracie Abrams of it all enough. So it does all seem like one song to me.
Yeah. Well, you're the music expert.
It is the same song.
Okay.
It is the same song. Okay. I would say that Gracie Abrams is generally, as an artist, she's very new and she is a discourse inducer. People have strong feelings about her personally.
Paul Mescal, who's dick we saw in Normal People. Just gotta say. Yeah. I'll say it. We saw his dick in Normal
And you can see it too on Hulu right now.
It was nice.
She's always showing her abs. She has she has really good abs. She shows them off. There's Nepo Baby discourse that she brings up. There's just general discourse around if she's good or not. She does sound a lot like Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I would say. Do either of you have strong feelings about Gracie Abrams that you feel comfortable sharing on mic?
I like it. I think a lot of young girls connect to it. And I think that's always awesome. I think that she seems to be having fun and her shows, like, it just seems like people are really connecting with it. And I think there's a lot of times, it happens again and again in culture when like young girls and teenage girls connect to something, people like to like tear it apart.
Yeah.
And I will say that a lot of times young girls are the ones who ultimately start the trends when people are able to hop on after they're like mean about something. So I think she seems really cool.
In Sex and the City, I think it's like, is it first the gays, then the girls, or first the girls, then the gays?
I don't have encyclopedia.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know. Yeah.
For trends, it's like
first, Samantha says it, right?
Yeah, Samantha says it's like first gay guys like you, then young girls like you.
It's when her boyfriend, she's trying to get him to take off. I think it was gays, then girls.
Gays, then girls. But yeah. No, exactly.
That makes sense.
So it's like poo-poo stuff. I mean, I said everything I have to say. Like, I think that, you know, skinny, rich, privilege, whatever. That doesn't take away from like talent and also her demographic. I'm not really like I'm living a different life than the young fans. And also there is some stuff where it's like, this is cool. Like, whatever.
Yeah, oh my God, I think
yeah,
that song.
I find myself singing the songs all the time.
Yeah, I think the song is catchy. I don't really. I also do feel that once I did engage with Gracie Abrams' music, I would like it because I'm a Swiftie. So, and it's in the Swiftian genre, exactly. So I'm like, I think
okay,
that
okay,
I,
good to
I
know.
Went to Poland to went, see Taylor Swift.
I did.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was great. And it was great.
Was
and the
Gracie
opener,
opening?
No, it was Paramore, which was actually fucking
oh,
awesome.
Yeah, that's everything. That's everything.
Which was actually fucking awesome.
Also Tennessee, then Paramore?
Yeah. Nashville.
Speaking of openers, oof, that brings us to why are Gracie Abrams stans Grassholes? Because it's not because they're little girls.
Yeah,
we don't hate little girls here.
We love little girls.
We respect
pause.
Little girls.
We think yes.
We think they contribute to society and
yes.
We want them to be protected
and
respected.
Empowered.
And we empower
to
little
subscribe
girls.
To us.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen to Annie DeRusso.
Exactly. We want that. We empower little girls. That's where we'll land.
Yeah.
But Gracie Abrams is going.
y'all suck that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not going to clip. We love little girls. We're not going to clip that.
So Abrams is going on tour. She announced her tour on January 24th, and she announced that the artist Dora Jar would be opening for the first 19 shows of her European leg. Do you guys know Dora Jar?
Yes.
I wasn't familiar with her before this.
I was not familiar until this, but Dora Jarkowski, which is very, that's her full name. I think that's very fun to be like, oh, actually Dora Jar is just part of my name. Anyway, she's a 28-year-old American bedroom pop musician from Northern California. She was among Vogue's 22 rising musicians set to rule 2022. And Alternative Press's rising artist. She's previously opened for Billie Eilish in the 1975. So she's like doing the thing,
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Shortly after the announcement that Dora Jar would be opening for Gracie Abrams, a fan, an Abrams fan using the name Dexter Morgan, which is the name of the serial killer from the show Dexter.
Cool.
Okay. Whoa.
Important to note. Launched a change.org petition demanding that Dora Jar be removed as the opener. Now, I know you guys are familiar with what happened, but like put yourself in a mindset where you're not. What would possibly be a reason why someone would start such a petition?
Maybe, for example, 20 Islamophobia.
Yeah.
Sure.
That could be a reason. They would have to be problematic.
Yeah, like, they would have to be very problematic,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
How many people signed the petition, by the way?
So that is actually still a mystery to me because the petition has since been removed.
Damn.
So I could not see its original form.
Like 200?
Yeah, it wasn't like a 100. Huge amount.
Okay.
It was
okay,
like,
okay.
Yeah, it was like, more people than should have participated in the petition, but it wasn't like thousands of Gracie Abrams fans. Like, we were still in 100. We're talking hundreds, not thousands. This is what the petition read. Many fans, including myself, are baffled by the recent announcement that Dora Jar will be opening for the Secret of Us Tour's European shows. We are perplexed as we do not recognize her. And with less than 2 weeks till the tour, it's virtually impossible to familiarize ourselves with her slow-paced songs.
Wow.
For a memorable concert experience, an opening act should set the mood and get the crowd excited. But Dora's slow-tempo songs may not achieve this goal. It's not just a personal concern. It is. According to Billboard, upbeat opening acts are essential to the overall concert experience. I would love to know, according to Billboard, in what way? Like, what is the article that
yeah,
you're getting
Billboard
this information?
Say, yeah.
Billboard said this where and when. Upbeat opening acts are essential to the overall concert experience as they set the tone for the headlining act and help keeping the audience's energy up throughout the show. And then it does cite, in parentheses, Billboard 2019, but in what capacity?
Is that like Chicago style?
Yeah, it's like a little MLA format citation that
okay,
says
yes.
Billboard 2019.
Okay, yes.
I believe MLA, you should have the author's name in there,
yeah,
but
so
whatever.
It's not MLA, it's probably the other one.
I'm rusty on my MLA versus Chicago style citations. Keeping this in consideration, it seems only fair that a more well-known, energetic artist or band should replace Dora Jar as the opening act. Please show your support for a more enjoyable concert experience by signing this petition for the replacement of Dora Jar as the opening act on the Secret of Us tour. The tour kicks off February 8th in Spain. So I got to ask, do you guys think that 2 weeks is enough time to familiarize yourself with Dora Jar's 2 EPs and 1 studio album?
I actually have so much to say about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I'm like, please
we
take the floor.
I have so much. Okay.
Tell us. go.
Y'all got
Hats
me there.
On.
Okay.
The hat is on.
This is such a crazy, crazy discourse to be happening. First of all, most of the time people don't even know who the opener is of any given concert.
Right.
You wouldn't have to familiarize yourself with the two EPs and full-length studio album beforehand. The whole point of an opener is often to be introduced to new music.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe the situation has gotten completely blown out of proportion. Like, I do feel like most people are really happy to have Dora Jar as an opener. She's incredible. Her music's so good. And it's such a cool thing for her to be, like, on big stages. But, yeah, she's opened for Billie Eilish and the 1975.
Yeah.
She's not, like, a stranger to opening arena tours. She's probably going to put on an incredible show. I do think, going back to TikTok and talking about whether or not artists were ready when they blew up to, like, play live shows, I think it's interesting to think about whether audiences were ready to go to live shows. I think there's something so... And that's been a huge discourse since touring started after TikTok, you know? And I feel like I got pretty lucky because, again, I feel like a lot of my touring audience did come from online in some sort and also from opening for other artists.
Yeah.
And my crowd has always been very respectful, but I have seen videos over the years of, like, the Mitski crowd, or, like, there's a few things of, like, a few different things have gone viral about people not really knowing how to say
the artist
screaming in a really intense way.
Yeah. Respectful. I see that too with Rico Nasty.
Yes.
And she's one of my favorite artists. She's
I've seen those.
Rapper, and she's open for male rappers, and then they're, like, shitty fans have, like, disrespected, you know?
Or people, like, sitting down in the middle of the venue on the floor. It's like, oh, actually, you stand up for the, you know, the opener. Like, it's a concert still. If you're, like, in the front row, you don't want to, like, people are, like, sitting against barricade. It's like, stand up. If you want to be the front row and you got there hours early, you can stand for the opener if you're able to, obviously. And it's just, like, become this whole thing where maybe the concert etiquette isn't what it used to be. Mm-hmm. And this would be a good example of it. And I do think, hopefully, this person now realizes, and maybe the few hundred people who signed the petition, it's a misunderstanding of what a concert is and what you think you're buying when you buy a ticket. Like, you're not buying access to curate the night.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're actually getting an opportunity to see, like, a really sick artist that the headliner endorses.
Yeah.
Which I think is the coolest thing ever. If you go to see, because I always wonder with my favorite artists, like, ooh, what are they listening to?
Yeah.
And then you get to see, like, in real time what they're endorsing. And it's such a fun way to watch two artists interact. So I think that it did get blown out of proportion. I think people are probably so excited to see Dora Jar.
Yes.
But it was kind of a reflection of the way that internet culture has maybe taken away some of live concert etiquette.
Yeah, and I think that it's like the artist is curating what experience they want for their fans. They like, and they, it's also like a big general vibe of, like, I know what my vibe is. I want someone who's bringing something a little bit different, even with comedy too. Like, I've opened up for comedians where it's like, I never even knew these guys.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They're like, look, my audience is primarily gay men and they love, like, female comedians.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring a female comedian. Or sometimes, I mean, this is, like, more cynical. This is not, I don't think, what Gracie Abrams is doing. But sometimes someone brings like a comedian that's a little more green and less experienced to make them look good.
Mm.
You know, some comedians do that of, like, I don't want someone who's going to outshine me. You know, I go to a lot of concerts and it's like, I wanted an all women lineup. So I picked this band.
Sure.
This and that.
Yeah.
Like, it's part of the thing. And instead of, like, where I think, like you said, some people view going to a concert live as an assignment. Oh, we have to memorize everything because we're going to sing along as loud as possible and stuff like that. Instead of, like, a live music thing that I'm going to experience myself, it has to be, like, this thing that, you know.
I do think there is a line where people do feel like participation is such a huge part of concerts now, which I think in a lot of ways has been really cool. Like, it's cool to see people singing the lyrics and at specific concerts, like maybe at a Mitski show, that's not what you're looking for. No. But, like, at a chapel show, it's so fun and so interactive. And
she said, like, everyone dress up in this theme.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that has been so fun to make concerts feel fun and engaging again. And the dedication is so cool. But I do think that there's a line where it's like the participation does end at a certain point.
Yeah.
And you are, like, you know, taking in what the artist has created in some ways, you know?
Yeah. And I do think it speaks to almost, like, the stan culture vibe online too. I think one of the issues with stand-up is that they do feel an ownership over the artist in a really intense way where it's like, well, how could you book an opener that I haven't heard of? And it's like, okay, well, other people have yeah. heard of them. I assure you, that's how they've got there.
A working musician. Yeah,
and
yeah.
most importantly, the artist that you're coming here to see has heard of them and likes them and thinks that they will provide the vibe that they want for their show that they've been working on that you actually haven't seen and don't know anything about.
Yeah.
It's that. Okay, so just to round this out, Dora Jar has been like, very good yeah. about this situation.
Yeah, she's been really funny about it and cool.
First tweeted like, hate comes with the job. The truth is, this is the biggest outpouring of love I've ever received from a fan base who is still unfamiliar with me. Gracie has beautiful, open-hearted fans, and I'm so excited for this. Also just tweeted funny stuff, being like, signed the petition, but rehearsing these songs just in case I remain the opener. Love you, Dexter. And it's like a link to
that's really
their,
funny. That's
like,
awesome.
Like what they're going to play on the tour. Basically, it's a playlist called Dora Jar on the Secrets of Us tour. So if you did want to familiarize yeah. yourself, you yeah. now have the 2 weeks.
I bet a lot of people did.
And she also responded to some people on Twitter who were feeling bad for her at one point saying, don't worry, this doesn't bum me out. I'm here to perform for all the music-loving, open-hearted fans. Those who aren't interested can go buy merch while I'm playing, but they might as well let me entertain them, though. An overwhelming amount of fans have been kind and excited. So she's taking it in good spirits. Gracie Abrams also commented about this on an Instagram post from Stereo Gum, and it appears that Stereo Gum has deleted their entire Instagram, because when I first went to the post...
Oh, my God.
Well, okay, I don't know what's going on, but I first went to the post. I couldn't see.
Yeah, did Stereo Gum block you?
What I thought, right? That was my first thought, is I was like, did Stereo Gum block me? Have I ever interacted with Stereo Gum? But then I went on my work account, which is tied to a different email, so it doesn't get the... Because now you can block, like, any account that's tied to one thing, but this account is actually tied to someone else, so I can see through blocks on this account. And I couldn't find Stereo Gum there either. So maybe they're blocking anything associated with me. But either way, as of this morning on Monday, something was going on with their Instagram account. But she did comment. I guess they like posted about this. And Gracie Abrams commented, just hearing about this absolute ridiculousness. It's wildly uncool and bizarre and also just does not remotely add up. I've only seen everyone's total excitement and I couldn't be luckier or prouder to share the stage with this talented wonder. Stream everything she's ever made, whether or not you're coming to the show. Dora forever and ever. And then she also shared an IG story saying, reiterating this and then dropping it, I'm so excited to share the stage with this gem of an artist. Love you, Dora. And the petition has since been deleted. So, to Dexter Morgan, the the Gracie Abrams stan, who uses the moniker Dexter Morgan, for using change.org in order to randomly hurt another musician's feelings for no reason, because you don't want them to be the opener.
It's a long crime, Elise.
It's a long crime. Sometimes the crimes are long. For inappropriate use of change.org, for hurting Dora Jar's feelings, and for not getting what it means to be in a fandom, we must say to you, go touch grass. And that's our episode.
Oh, that's real.
Right?
Y'all brought that home in a real way.
Yeah, we tell people to go touch grass.
They need to go touch grass.
Dexter needs to go touch some grass majorly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, where can people find you? You're doing your tour. That's it for our episode.
Yeah, that's
it. A real long one. But
where can they send their change.org petition about your tour?
Yes,
guys, that's our $17. We must prioritize.
No, the openers for my tour are so good that I feel like the petition would be like, get Annie DeRusso off her tour. I just want to see the openers. I like have all my favorite artists opening for me. I'm going on the longest tour I've ever been on.
Wow.
It's my first album. Comes out March 7th. The tour starts March 24th. And it's US, Canada. And then if you're UK, Europe, look out. Maybe some of my first dates coming in the coming weeks. And yeah, I've got Rafaela, Squirrel Flower, and Dafo opening. Different
I love
legs.
Squirrel Flower. They made a really good cover of So Hot You're
Hurting My Feelings. Yes.
That I really love.
Best.
Girly.
Best. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, come out to a show. Yeah.
And find you online. What's your handle?
Annie DeRusso.
Wow.
Yeah, Annie DeRusso.
Simple. And you know what else is simple? You can find us online at Go Touch Grass Pod on everything. Follow our YouTube, subscribe, and you can find me at Pandalise on Instagram and Elise Navidad on TikTok.
You can find me at Millie_Tamaris on Instagram and TikTok. You can find me on Twitter. Blue Sky, through all the other shit, Millie Tamaris. And until next time,
go touch grass!
That was a HeadGum Podcast. Hi, I'm Caleb Herron, host of the So True podcast, now on HeadGum. Every week, me and my guests get into it, and we get down to what's really going on. I ask them what's so true to them, how they got to where they are in life, a bunch of other questions, and we also may or may not test their general trivia knowledge. Whether it's one of my sworn enemies, like Brittany Broski or Drew Afualo, or my actual biological mother, Kelly, my guests and I are just after the truth. And if we find it, great, and if not, no worries. So subscribe to So True on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and watch video episodes on the So True with Caleb Herron YouTube channel. New episodes drop every Thursday. Love ya.
Hey, it's Nicole Byer here. Let me ask you something. Are you tired of endless swiping on dating apps? Fed up with awkward first dates and disappointing hookups? Girl, same. Welcome to Why Won't You Date Me, the podcast where I figure out love and how to suck less at dating. Each week, I get real with comedians, friends, and celebrities about their love lives. We swap dating horror stories, awkward hookups, and dive into the messy and wonderful world of relationships. I've chatted with amazing guests like Conan O'Brien, Whitney Cummings, Sarah Silverman, Trixie Mattel, Tiffany Haddish, and so many more. So whether you're single, mingling, or booed up, there's something in it for everyone. Tune into Why Won't You Date Me with me, Nicole Byer, and discover insights that might just save you from your next dating disaster. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and catch full video episodes on YouTube. New episodes drop every Friday.